This episode of Continuing Mission is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and to help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/TrekFM. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type BABEL into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
My guest today is John Carrigan, a very gifted actor and a writer who has an amazing story to tell. Early in his career, he met with none other than Gene Roddenberry himself, who had an effect on John that was to change his life forever. He is featured in 8 fan-made Star Trek films, and in doing so, he has established and embodied the character of the Klingon warlord Karg in the Star Trek New Voyages series. He's also worked on the BBC show The British Empire alongside Chris Barry, better known as Rimmer, in the series Red Dwarf. Our conversation today was recorded entirely in Klingon, but due to subspace interference and a lag in the universal translator, the sound quality is not 100%. So let's get into the turbo lift and say Kasta Nuk to John Carrigan. Welcome to Continuing Mission, John Carrigan.
Good evening. My pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you, John. It's amazing. And there's lots of fans of Star Trek New Voyages who are going to be fascinated to hear you talk about John Carrigan and where you come from and a little bit about your background.
I've been a Star Trek fan for most of my life. It was it took me by surprise that I became so involved and loved this thing when it came to English TV. I think like most of the world did. I used to go to Star Trek conventions and think I was Captain Kirk. I was never a Klingon then, just Captain Kirk. And I was lucky enough through loads of different events to be invited to the set of Star Trek to meet Gene Roddenberry in the States. I could go into more detail later on, but that inspired me to become what I am today, an actor. Gene actually gave me a speech that changed my life.
I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but that's fascinating. How are you talking about the set of the motion picture or the set of
the motion picture? Yeah, it's just before the Wrath of Khan was being shot.
Okay, so how did that come about? How did John Carrigan get to meet Gene Roddenberry?
Dun dun dun. Well, I've been practicing the martial arts for a few years. Then I've been practicing there 47 years by now, but then I was still, you know, okay, a young chap who was okay at the martial arts. I was at the convention, and there was we were invited to see Alien, I think, or a preview of Alien in the cinema beside the convention. We went to line up to see in the foyer of the cinema, and then there was a football riot. The fans, I think, of Leicester City were playing Manchester United or something in Leicester, and they went on a rampage, and they headed for this cinema. Well, my mum was there with me and everything, and I just grabbed this disabled girl, pulled her in the doors and held the doors shut. I think I actually punched one of the nutters before I pulled the door shut. Anyway, I held the doors shut. Luckily, they were trying to push them in. If they tried to pull them open, I couldn't have held them. But they only went one way. The police came after what seemed forever. And because I stopped them getting to the foyer and helped this disabled girl, as a thank you, they asked me if I'd like to go to breakfast with George Takei and go for a run with George. And I did. And then George, when he went back to America, told Jimmy Doohan. And then I looked after Jimmy when he came over and introduced himself. And then Richard Arnold came over, who was Gene Roddenberry's assistant. Richard had heard about this mysterious young chap from England. And I struck up a really good friendship with Richard. And then I think it was about 7 days after Richard went home from the convention, there was a phone call. And I went to the phone and it was Richard Arnold. And he put someone else on the phone and it was Gene Roddenberry. I was absolutely speechless. Cut long story short, I was invited to go and be Gene's guest in America and even paid for me to go over there. And I was the guest of Gene Roddenberry to visit the Star Trek sets. which was unbelievable.
If you had died at that moment, you would have been in heaven, and that would have been it.
Yes.
You've achieved everything you needed to achieve at this point.
Well, it's strange you say that, because I think any Star Trek fan would have said the same thing. But I was taken into Gene's office, and he's a wonderful big man. He gave me a hug, and then he sat me in his office, and he said, looked in my eyes and said, "What are your ambitions?" And like an idiot, I said, "I'd like to sit in Captain Kirk's chair." And Gene smiled and said, "Well, I can do that for you, but what are your life ambitions?" And I said, "Well, I wish I'd have been an actor." And he said to me, "Are you dead?" And I said, "No." He said, "Why aren't you an actor?" And I said, "Well, I can't act." And then he put his right hand on my shoulder, looked in my eyes and said, "If man had only dreamed of walking on the moon, if we hadn't taken the steps to get there, we'd be earthbound. If you wish to fly tomorrow, flap your wings today, and I'll support you every inch of the way. Be an actor." Then he said, "Let's come and do your first ambition. Let's sit in Captain Kirk's chair." That was the turning point of my life. I used to have two pictures on my wall at home. One was Captain Kirk's chair with Kirk in it, and one was Bruce Lee. I used to say to all my friends, "One day I'm going to push that bat on Captain Kirk's chair and be an instructor in Bruce Lee's school." Well, when Gene took me and Richard took me on the sets, I went up to the chair, looked at the button and went, "Done it." And then the same trip, I visited what was used to be Bruce Lee's school. And all these years later, I became a master in Bruce Lee's art, Jeet Kune Do. So both of my dreams came true, but through lots of hard work. But the acting was Gene Roddenberry. I used to go back every year after that and visit Gene. I'd be invited to the set's very Star Trek movie. He offered me a walk-on part on Next Generation. There I was with Bill Tice being fit for my uniform, all because of that one act at a Star Trek convention in England. And it changed my life. And I became an actor and a stuntman and everything because of Gene.
I'm speechless. It's an amazing story. I don't know anybody else who could tell such a tale. It's amazing.
Whenever I'm a guest at a convention, a Star Trek convention, I stand up the front. Obviously, I talk about different things I've been in and Star Trek and all the other films and TV I've done, but I tell this story. I say to people, you know, "Who's got impossible dreams?" And they put their hands up. And I say, "Now, put your hands down, put them up again. Who've got dreams that are possible?" And I say, "Same people, put your hands up." Then I tell my story. You know, and it made it even more amazing, because my father was a paranoid schizophrenic, and all I had to retreat into was Star Trek. I built my own Captain Kirk chair, and while my dad was upstairs, bless him, doing what his illness made him do, I was downstairs living Star Trek and escaping, saying, "Tomorrow will be better than today." And it was. So thanks to Gene. I never knew why he took me under his wing, but he did. He believed in me, and I became an actor. Each year we go back and say, "I've done this training, that training. I've got my equity card, Gene, and thanks to you." Amazing stuff.
I'm absolutely overwhelmed by that story. It's incredible. So leading on from Gene Roddenberry, you moved into Star Trek fan films, and yep, particularly with James Cawley and his production team. How did you make that leap?
Well, because of my association with Star Trek, visiting Gene, I also got to meet many people behind the scenes. I had a fast friendship with Walter Koenig. Walter stayed in my house here. I've stayed in Walter's house. I used to regularly go running with George. I looked after William Shatner, security, and so on. But I also got to know Mike and Denise Okuda. In those days, Denise Okuda was Denise Tathwell before she married Mike Okuda. And we were fast friends. And Richard Arnold was the central hub that held us all together. Well, one day I had a phone call from Mike and Denise Okuda, and said, "I've got a friend, his name's Doug Drexler, he's come over to England. Would you take him and try and get him tours of any English film studios you can?" And I'd worked at Shepperton and Pinewood, so I got passes for Doug Drexler and his wife, Dorothy, to come with me. We became friends, and then Doug went back to America, and about a year later, I had a call from Doug Drexler, and he said, "Have a look at these sets," and he sent me some pictures, and I said, "Well, they're pictures of the original sets, but with no one on them. I've never seen them." He said, "No. They're made by a guy called James Cawley." He said he's recreated these amazing sets. And he said, "Not only that, but James wants a film, original Star Trek again. And Eugene Roddenberry, Rod, Gene's son, is going to be executive producer." And Doug said, "I'd like to write a part for you." And him and a guy called Jim Vanover, who they were both working on Paramount Star Treks at this time, but Paramount and CBS didn't know, these guys were also helping to create stuff for James Cawley. Jim Vanover had a pseudonym, and so did Doug Drexler. And they created my character, Karg. Because of the martial arts, Doug always said, "I have a certain bearing. I stand differently." And, you know, so he created the character of Karg for me. I went over to meet the guys in Los Angeles, had a small screen test, which was really me meeting them and putting on some, you know, bug voices. And that was it. Thanks to Doug Drexler and Mike Denisakuda. That's the story of how I became, yeah.
Yeah. And so you flew over to New York.
No, yeah, to film, yeah.
And you go to the studios because they haven't changed their location. They're still exactly where they were. Is that correct?
Well, originally, that was in Ticonderoga. A very small set. They just had the bridge and in, and transporter room. They had to go to another building where they constructed the corridors. I did one episode there. Then they moved to another town called Port Henry. And they bought a large like warehouse, which was a car dealership. And there they created loads of the set, corridors, bridge, sick bay, and we filmed loads of episodes there, including the one with Walter Koenig, the one with George Takei, Denise Crosby. But now they've moved back to Ticonderoga, and it's the Star Trek Museum, really. You can visit the sets. They're laid out exactly as our own Desilu Studios. But we did film everything in upstate New York.
Okay. I didn't know that the different parts of the sets were in different cities. So that's interesting. I never knew that. So when you walked on, let's say, the bridge, what were your feelings walking onto the bridge as just as a person, just as John Carrigan, and walking onto the bridge as your character, Karg?
I had to suppress the John Carrigan. When I first met James is, a great fan as well. You become a professional, so you have to subdue the fan inside you, otherwise you'd never get work. But when I walked onto James Colley's bridge, the young boy in me came back because it was just an impossible dream. James had made a 360-degree bridge, and he put the sound effects on. And everywhere you looked, it was walking to a place that you only ever walked in your mind. You know, even when I visited the sets with Gene, it was the motion picture, not the classic Enterprise. I was overwhelmed. I just really couldn't speak. But when I acted on the set, I had to do the same thing. I only lost it at one point. There was one point. I had to beam down. The first time I beamed down, in the first episode I did, it was a time change. There had been time travel that changed the timeline. And Karg, my character, was in Starfleet.
On the Farragut.
Yeah, in harm's way. And my character beams down on the Enterprise transporter. And I stood there, and Rod was on the set, Rod Roddenberry. And Rod knew about my closeness with his father, and he knew about, well, you know, the stories of my father. And all of a sudden, I looked at Rod, and he put his thumb up. And it overwhelmed me. There was, you know, the son of Gene Roddenberry putting his thumb up to me. I was on the transporter room, pads. I was about to beam down. I'm in Star Trek. And for a second, I just couldn't do it. It was almost too much. It was surreal. Now, you never get to touch your dreams, your fantasy, but there I was living it. You know, I snapped myself back into where I had to be. But inside, I was like, good grief, what am I doing?
So you'll have to forgive my sense of humor. So this is where you got the nickname John Take 42 Carried.
Thank you very much for that. Yeah, I think anyone in that position would feel the same.
So Karg comes alive at this point. And where did you get Karg's voice from? Where did you get Karg's accent from?
Well, when I went to Doug's house and he spoke to me about Karg, Doug Drexler, he went and he said, come with me. We got a DVD, and it was Yul Brynner. He said, what's Yul Brynner? He said, he commands every scene he's in. Even when he's not speaking, he is. He said, what do you think about Karg being larger than life and being not Yul Brynner, but Yul Brynner-ish? And I said, you know, the only thing that gets me down sometimes with Star Trek is that you have an American Klingon or an English Klingon. I said, any time you learn another language, there's an inflection of something there. I said, so I'd like to infuse Karg with an inflection of something that you can't tell where it's from. And I didn't want to speak in my voice, so I lowered Karg's pitch to there. So I speak through my throat. And rather than saying the Enterprise, it said the Enterprise with an L. You know, it's this weird inflection that I worked on with Doug. It is still English, but there's something off about it. Yeah, so I pitched it there. And after 2 weeks of being Karg on set, you come back and your voice disappears for a while.
Well, it's obviously very noticeable because I picked up on it. And I think I've got a good ear for accents and where people come from.
Thank you. I couldn't
tell where Karg came from. Then I realized, of course, thank you, Kronos.
I tried to make it that way. I didn't want him to be this English actor doing Klingon. Obviously speaking English, but thank you for picking up on that. I did try and work hard to make him otherworldly and not just my pitch.
Oh, there's so many amazing aspects about Karg. but without trying to say that you are emulating anybody else who played a similar role, these augmented Klingons, you've embodied it, probably in ways that the other actors who played Koloth or who played Kang, not Kang, but who was the other guy?
William Campbell.
You kind of embodied them in a way, but made it better, is what I'm really trying to get around to.
Thank you very much.
And I'm not saying that to, you know, stroke your ego or anything, but I'm looking at that guy and I'm thinking, if he was a real, in real life, if he's a real augmented Klingon, that would be, what I'm thinking is the William Campbells of the world should be looking to you for the benchmark.
That's
where I was going with that.
I wanted to make Karg believable, and to reach the position he reached, he must have had some great attributes, and he believed in himself totally. He had to believe his position was right all the time. And I think that's why it caused some great dynamics with Kirk, because he saw Kirk on a par with him. And Kirk was the benchmark he wanted to beat at every chance he had. So it was always him and Kirk. That's why we did the no-win scenario, the small story. Yeah, the fans were saying, why is it when he first sees Kirk, there's this instant animosity, this instant thing between them. I love playing that character because I had to get into his skin. I had time to really think why he says what he says and why he does what he does. And it was fascinating, you know, because he wasn't just pure evil. He can't just play pure evil. It's not believable. Everything he does is for a reason, and he believes it's necessary for the Empire. Whenever I wanted to get back into his character, I would just squint my eyes and be arrogant. Arrogance is his key word. And that was the beginning of Karg. Arrogant belief in everything he says has got to be right. You know, no one can question what he says.
Talk about someone bringing a character to life and embodying that character, John. And you did an amazing job. It's a shame that there isn't future plans for the character, but, you know, who knows? These days, anything is possible.
Thank you so much. It means a lot to hear that, you know, from an actor. Thank you.
Okay. So as the character went on, you obviously impressed the powers that be, because they said, oh, let's bring Karg back. He's, you know, Kirk always seemed to have a Klingon adversary. So Karg was in demand. So you came back. How many episodes did you do? Was it six?
Well, we did no-win scenario, first of all. In Harm's Way. Then there was the Walter Koenig episode. That was my story idea. I pitched that. It was my idea.
Oh, we'll talk about that in a sec. Yeah.
So there was the one with To Serve My Days, which is Walter's episode. Then we had the Blood and Fire. We did No-Win Scenario. We did Katoomba. And what not many people don't realize, that we actually filmed Mindsifter with Karg, and not the actor who came in and was Kor. I went over there for Mindsifter and filmed all my Karg and Leak scenes for that. Then there was a dispute with the writer, and so they threw out that script. But we filmed the scenes. I got the scenes, and it was really – I get mind – well, am I allowed to say it? Mind raped by Spock, which was an amazing
– I think Spock from the alternate universe does the mind rape, not the good Spock.
Well, in this one, in Mindsifter, Kirk had been thrown back in time by Karg to 1950s, and he was lost, and I wouldn't tell them what I'd done with him. I'd mind-sifted him, whacked his mind, and sent him back in time to Earth. And so Spock had to find out where he was. And so I physically fight him, and he overpowers me in the briefing room in front of everyone and does that. It's a really powerful scene. But the Mindsifter one you've never seen. So it's sad that we never get to see me, because we filmed it. I didn't use our scenes. They've got another actor and another Klingon. James Colley released Mindsifter, but a different version with another actor, because he couldn't use the script that was filmed with Karg and Leak.
Oh, dear. Was Karg always the same guy as you progressed through the episodes? Did he kind of develop a little bit better? He was more confident as Karg. You know, your first time in the role, you're doing what you think you should do. Your sixth time in the role, you got him. This is who he is. And he's, you know, much more swaggery.
Being able to play off James Corley's Kirk, we had this rapport, which was wonderful, which I think you see a lot of in David Gerrold's Blood and Fire, but we were only ever on the view screen together. We never come face to face in that episode. But in Katoomba, we actually come face to face. And there's a grudging respect for the two of them as warriors. And I think having my wife play Liak, it gave me something else to bounce off of. Slight humor now and again, because Liak was even more badass than Karg. She was just, you know, kill them horribly now quickly for no reason. So, yeah, he did. He grew. And I think Katoomba was a really good episode. He became warlord and you saw another side to Karg. And I think the last lines I say to Kirk on the view screen is, next time we meet, there should be a fleet at my back. So I'm giving that ominous warning, you know. It did progress. It was a good story arc. I'd like to have had the final coup de grace when with Mindsifter. The last scene I filmed, I'm in the brig and I run at the force field. And I'm stuck there on the force field, my eyes rolling back, and I throw myself back and just look. And that's a really good way for him to bow out, I think. But yeah, it was a good progression. The writers did see a transition. It wasn't just the same lines, and it was never just Mr. Nasty, which was why he was so enjoyable to play. There was a believability about him and a nobleness about him, really.
Yes, there was. You got the opportunity to play a different Klingon character in another Star Trek fan production, and that was the Renegades series.
Yes, I actually did Star Trek of Gods and Men as well, with like a share week. I get killed by Walter Koenig after being too mouthy. That was quite a difficult film because I had Tim Russ and Michelle Nichols, Walter Koenig, and who played Harry Kim from Voyager in one scene?
Garrett Wang.
I have to do scenes with them. At one point, I was nervous about the dialogue because Tim Russ, when he first met me, came up to me. I'm a friend with Tim now, so he was director also on Renegades. He came up to me and said, buddy, is your swear word together? And I said, yes, Tim, my together. I said, my name's John, by the way. So he's a very stern director. And I worked with him again on Renegades. But Walter knew I was very nervous doing this scene with my heroes, you know, wanted to come across as an actor. So Walter, after questioning them all in Renegades, and then Walter says, enough, pulls the phaser and kills me. I've got all through my dialogue, thought, I've done it really well. All of a sudden he bends down, puts the phaser between my legs and fires it for a joke. My friend, just to make me, so we have to do the scene all over again. Yeah, then I did Star Trek Renegades. I had two parts in that, which was marvellous. Walter, again, was in the main character in that, and Tim Russ and Walter contacted me with Sky Conway, who also was the creator of Gods and Men. And I played a Starfleet Admiral in Renegades, looking like me in Starfleet uniform. They attempt to assassinate me. And then I was the only Klingon in that. But that was a really interesting part because Gary Graham in Star Trek Renegades, he played a shapeshifter called Ragnar, who also was in The Gods and Men. And I play Gary Graham as Ragnar, who shapeshifts to a Klingon to speak to another Starfleet guy. So I was Ragnar being the Klingon. I wasn't just a Klingon. And I had a line in it which was ridiculous because it was so hard. They put Klingon teeth in me. And I have to say to the guy on the screen, can you not see my pulchritudinous face? You try saying pulchritudinous with Klingon teeth. I couldn't do it. So they took the teeth out and they darkened my own teeth, which they didn't tell me you have to scrape off afterwards. You can't just clean it off. So my fortuitous line was, so I did that. So I was playing Gary Graham. I was playing Ragnar, playing a Klingon, because Klingons wouldn't say fortuitous. And then after I did those scenes, Tim Russ came to me and said, right, now you're the real Klingon who appears. So be the Klingon with that dialogue. And I said, I haven't had the lines of that, Tim. I only thought I was Ragnar Klingon. No one had given me the lines for the real Klingon that comes back. So I had to quickly learn them. And I remembered seeing a thing with Kenneth Brenner about menace. When I was being the Klingon Ragnar, I was sitting back. But when I had to become the real Klingon, I tipped my head forward. So the menace was looking underneath the brow. So that helped change the persona. Luckily, I got through those lines of the other Klingon. Yeah, so I played a few ridgeheads who were very rawr, and Karg. And the Starfleet Admiral, which was a good, refreshing thing to do.
Earlier on, we were talking about an episode called To Serve All My Days, and this featured Walter Koenig very heavily in the show. And I remember some time ago talking to you about this, but I'd like you to, you know, expand on that because, well, in your own words, how did this show come about?
Well, James Corley, I just finished an episode with James Corley filming in upstate New York. He was driving me back to the airport. And I said, you know, I'm a really good friend of Walter's. I said, I'd love to get Walter involved in this. And he said, yeah, it'd be great if we could only think of a way to get him in, you know. And I said to James, well, look, the episode, The Deadly Years, I said, everyone got old in that. I said, apart from Chekhov. adrenaline, when he got frightened, flooded his body, and that stopped him aging. I said to James, I've been thinking, James, what if something was still sleeping in his blood that triggers the aging process, and he suddenly starts to age like the rest of the deadly years? I said, that way we could bring water, the real water canning in, as well as having a young actor play him when he's young. I said, I've written out like a synopsis for this. I had it in my mind for a while. And James was like over the moon. He didn't think Walter would do it. So I contacted Walter, and Walter was really up for it. And then Walter got DC Fontana involved. So from my story idea, DC Fontana fleshed it out to a big script. And it was an amazing episode, you know, because Walter gets to play Chekhov again in his yellow shirt and relive lots of moments from classic Star Trek. The way Walter had lots of input into the script, Walter's dialogue as Chekhov, who's dying, what he really would feel as he's dying, and was his life, did it mount to anything? And when the aging Chekhov comes on the bridge and saves the ship, he finally gets to, I think, validate himself as Chekhov, because Walter never thought that in Star Trek he did a good job. He wasn't given enough to be what he thought, the adulation the fans give him. But I think in this episode he got a chance, not only to show what a fantastic actor he was, but that Chekhov actually gets to save the day and have the ending Walter wanted him to have. So I was very grateful and pleased I could just play a part in that, get my friend Walter to put on that shirt one more time. And when he actually walked on the set, Kevin Haney, who had an Academy Award for Driving Miss Daisy, he was the makeup man from that. Kevin Haney made Walter look young first. He aged him to maybe 40 years of age, because at the time, Walter was like nearly 70. And then he slowly aged him up to 110. But when Walter walked on the bridge as the young Chekhov again, it was incredible. Walter couldn't believe it. He sat on the helm, crossed his legs, which he didn't realize he did automatically whenever he sat at the helm in classic Star Trek. Yeah, he put his arms out and everyone just did a round of applause, and there wasn't a dry in the house. It was amazing, including Walter's.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was really taken with that story. The young actor who plays the young version of Chekhov, he did an amazing job too.
He had there was a theatre show of Spock's Brain that went touring, and Walter went to see it. It was like a semi-comedy, and this young guy playing Chekhov was Andy Bray. Walter chose him. He went backstage afterwards and said, look, I've got a script coming out. I'd like you to play me. And he went to Walter's house, and Walter, you know, sort of coaxed him in being Chekhov, which must have been an amazing experience.
And then the ending kind of got me, because I was thinking, okay, up to the point where Chekhov dies, no spoilers on this podcast, up to the point where Chekhov passed away.
He dies in his quarters, yeah.
He dies in his quarters, yeah. I thought, well, hang on, that can't be right, because in later episodes, Chekhov obviously is alive. So what's going on here?
In the feature films, he's alive, yeah. Then what version you've seen, there's two versions that went out. He wanted to die at the end. So to give him his wishes, they filmed his ending, and that was issued. And then James got Andy Bray to come in and lay on the bed and wake up as if that had all been a dream. Walter wasn't pleased with it, and then they issued that episode. Walter wasn't happy because he said, I'll never be Chekhov again. I wanted to end that way. But so James said,
logically speaking, he couldn't, because he couldn't be. That was the 60s Enterprise, and he goes on to be on the Enterprise B.
As we know. Yeah. So part was to fulfill Walter's wish, and then they had to re-establish Chekhov's continuity. So that scene was put in, and they re-released the episode.
Well, John Carrigan, I have to say, it's been an absolute pleasure and an insight to talk to you about your character, Karg, and your involvement with the Star Trek productions, Star Trek New Voyages. I'd like to talk to you some more. Maybe we'll set a date for the future and we'll do that. But before we go, let me just ask you, where can people find you on the internet, and how can people get in touch with you should they wish to?
Yes, I'm on Facebook. You can find me, John Carrigan, on Facebook. Or I've got my own website, which is johncarrigan.co.uk. And on that, you can see clips from Star Trek, Westerns I've done, martial arts films I've done, TV series, as well as lots of information about me. But please say hi on Facebook. I've also got an actors page on Facebook too. So I look forward to meeting you.
Okay. Well, John Carrigan, you've been on a great guest to have on Continuing Mission. I look forward to talking with you again at some point in the future. But for now, let's say goodbye, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Tony. My pleasure.
Well, I hope you got a kick out of listening to John Carrigan's story. It's exceptional. And he certainly fulfilled the wishes of a lot of us. Who wouldn't like to sit in Captain Kirk's chair? And who wouldn't like to be introduced to Star Trek by Gene Roddenberry himself? If you haven't seen all of John's work on Star Trek New Voyages, you can check them out on YouTube, where they're all freely available. We feel very honored to have had John Carrigan on the show today, and we wish him kapla for the future. Now, across our network here at Trek FM, we've got a huge range of other shows that you may have missed. So have a listen to this.
Previously on Trek.fm, Melodic Treks.
I really like the two Fairhaven episodes that we got. I know a lot of people are either very hot on these episodes or very cold on them. They've never bothered me. I think they're a lot of fun. And they're silly, but whatever. But one of the things that's really cool about them is we get something different in the musical field for Star Trek, with this wonderful Irish-style music.
Earl Grey.
Well, I just noticed mine deals with all naked people.
Richard!
What? Wow! All right.
Wait a minute. Oh, Justice Tappich, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I just noticed that. I was like, oh.
There's nudity in each of those episodes.
Well then.
TVMA.
Warp 5.
It was a weekly thing. It was originally on Tuesdays. At some point, Trip decided to make it a nightly thing, or at least that was his idea, but then it went back to a weekly thing. I'm like, that sounds just like my life, because this is the type of thing where it's like, yeah, you get together every Tuesday, and then you gotta wait a whole week, and at some point you're like, we should be doing this every day.
To the journey!
Yeah, I mean, the way that he behaves towards B'Elanna is kind of... he gets a bit creepy there.
Well, he gets punched too, just like Joe Carey, so...
he does. B'Elanna makes a habit of punching her staff.
It's team building, it's like trust falls.
It is team building. Maybe it's like some kind of exciting club.
Yeah, I've been punched by B'Elanna Club?
I've been punched by B'Elanna, and I'm obviously now in the inner circle for engineering.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Well, I hope you had fun on our show today, but do check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us email, you can use the form on our website at trekfm.com/contact. Choose to send to a show and select continuing mission, and that will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. You can always find me on the Babel Conference on Facebook, and on Twitter you can find me at Shamrock165. We'd like to acknowledge the rest of the TrekFM team, without which this or any other podcast would not be possible. C. Brian Jones, our founder and publisher of TrekFM. Executive producers Matthew Rushing and Ken Tripp. And Aaron Harvey, our highly accomplished art director. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/TrekFM.
That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. I'm Tony Robinson, and thank you for joining with us today on Continuing Mission. And see you soon on the next mission.